So I was having a conversation with one of our staff members about documentation, and he had come over from a in-network practice that he was working at, and he was talking about just how long it would take him to document and click through and the workflow and how just how time-consuming it was and how much easier it's been with the software that we use, which is PT Everywhere. And I know for us, we're very, very aware of sort of time leaks within our staff and our own schedules. And it's just one of the worst things you can do is just waste time on things when you could be doing them more efficiently. One thing for us is we have to document. It's something we need to do, and you need to do it as efficiently as you possibly can, because that's where you're going to save a lot of your time. You know, we were seeing our staff members save upwards of an hour a day as far as cleaning up his documentation, making it more efficient. What if you got an hour of your day back just from documentation? What if all of your staff did the same thing? Highly recommend you take a look at PT Everywhere. It's been a huge time saver for us and really has made a big difference in our efficiency of our practice. You can check them out at pteverywhere.com. I think you're going to really like what they have to offer.
So here's the question. How do physical therapists like us, who don't want to see 30 patients a day, who don't want to work home health, and have real student loans, create a career and life for ourselves that we've always dreamed about? This is the question, and this podcast is the answer. My name is Danny Matei, and welcome to the PT Entrepreneur Podcast.
What's up, guys? Doc Danny here with the PT Entrepreneurs Facebook group and the PT Entrepreneur podcast. And today we get to talk to somebody that's like one of the fastest growing cash practices in the country. He and his wife, and this is Nick, his wife, Lindsay Hagen, own Capacity PT in Bend, Oregon. It's been fun to watch you grow. And like I was telling you before, I did my homework. I know there's a lot on the back end that you've done, you know, so it's always funny when we see somebody, they're like, oh, I had a lot of success year one. But it's like, a overnight success, 10 years in the making kind of thing.
Right, exactly.
And, so I'm interested to unpack kind of the evolution of everything and kind of share what's helped you be successful. So thanks for taking the time. I know you're a busy guy. You got a lot going on, but I'm excited for today.
Yeah. Appreciate it. I'm excited to be here. Thanks for having me on. And hopefully I can give some good knowledge to the audience. So yeah, let's go. Let's talk.
All right, cool. So I always like to start out with this. Like, why, like, what was it about the profession, first of all, that, you know, you decided like physical therapy is the way that I want to go? Like what drew you to that?
Yeah. So I had the standard story of back pain as a middle schooler, played multiple sports, particularly baseball, kind of did me in, and kind of, I had a spondy. So if you don't know what that is, whatever, low back hypermobility, just fought through and eventually just got to the point where I couldn't deal with it anymore. And looking back on it, my PT didn't do the greatest job, but it was still, this is kind of like release my psoas and give me some planks and things like that. But it kind of introduced me to like, hey, I don't have to sit at a desk. I can actually be active. Always really into sports. I think at an early age, I kind of knew I wanted to do it. So in high school, I knew I wanted to do it. I think at that point, I was like, hey, I want to be like the physical therapist for the Lakers. And then I can tell you more along the path here. I realized that wasn't what I wanted to do. And just kind of went through it. So like I graduated senior year of high school and knowing what I wanted to do, I kind of signed up for classes freshman year of college. I was already volunteering, getting experience. So I was kind of early on the train, which helped me because I wasn't necessarily like a 4.5 GPA student or any of that stuff, but I had a lot of good experience and kind of just knew I wanted to do it from the get-go. I come from a family of helpers. So I'm not super religious, but both my mom and my brother are ministers. And then my other brother is an oncologist, like a cancer doctor. So everybody just kind of with people and helpers. So I think that's just kind of like how we were raised, is to like be outgoing and interact. And it just was a natural fit. So yeah, that's kind of what drew me to it.
Yeah. That is helpful. I feel like knowing what you want to do early is rare. You know, I was shooting some hoops with my brother-in-law the other day, and he changed his major like five times. It took him 7 years to graduate from undergrad. Yeah. In fact, he graduated with his graduate degree. We're the same age, the same month that I graduated with my doctorate. And it was because I just, like you, I knew what I wanted to do from the get-go and I just didn't change it. So I think that's pretty rare though. I don't think a lot of people do that. So, but for you, okay, you graduate and then, you know, it seemed like reading your bio, it seems like you've had some interesting experience with different, like, you know, snow sport areas and like in the sports arena. So you said you wanted to be the Lakers PT, but what changed your mind?
So yeah, I went to PT school in San Francisco, California, San Francisco. And then I knew I wanted to do sports. So I went right into like a sports residency. I went to, it's at the Stedman Clinic. The place is called Howard Head Sports Medicine, which was awesome. Dr. Stedman basically like invented ACLs and microfractures. So we would have, can't violate HIPAA, but whatever, like.
It's in Vail, right? This is in Colorado?
Yeah, it's in Vail. Yeah. So we'd have like the best of the best athletes come. And the bummer of it is they would be there for like 4 weeks and then fly back to wherever they're at and do the rest of the rehab. It was a cool, super cool experience kind of seeing how that side of the business works of working with high-end profile people. Even like the Joe Schmo person there was a multimillionaire from Argentina and stuff like that. So it was a different clientele. Finished that. My wife's also a PT, which I think we'll talk about later. We did some traveling PT. And then I actually went in and did like a sports fellowship, which was super cool. I don't know if the APATA does this anymore, but you go to like different hubs across the country for like 2 weeks and you just learn from them. So went to like the Cleveland Clinic, went to Alabama with like Kevin Wilk and Dr. Andrews.
Right.
Went to New York Special Surgery Center, whatever that one's called.
Yeah.
Just a lot of diverse sports training. And then eventually I became a PT. I was like, okay, I got to do this, like treat people.
Yeah.
Versus learning all the time. And then the big thing is I just didn't have like the hands-on manual therapy. And I believe that's definitely an important cog to the wheel. So I went through like a manual therapy track as well. And then, yeah, just started being a PT. So that was kind of my pathway of starting very sporty and then realizing my deficits. And the manual therapy thing I went through is called the Institute of Physical Art. But the way I describe it, it's like PNF meets manual therapy or PNF meets Mulligan. So it's kind of like active manual therapy.
Hmm.
Where from what I've seen, just like putting someone on the table and popping them might get short-term gains, but ideally you're like combining neuro with your manual and like having them move through functional patterns and things like that. So it just like hit a light bulb with my like sport experience and kind of went down that track. And yeah, and I was in Portland at that point doing a lot of that stuff. So then we moved to Bend eventually, and that's where I'm at now.
Yeah. So yeah. That's a lot. I mean, it's just a lot of experience. And I think that's always helpful, at least from what I've seen. You know, when somebody goes in to start their own practice, it's this, I guess this idea of like clinical competency or confidence even, because sometimes it's not even competency as much as it is just confidence, you know, like even people that are newer out of the, you know, out of school, they might just be really confident that they can get somebody better, even though they may not have like learned quite as much as somebody else. You know, so do you feel like that helped you quite a bit as you kind of rolled into, you know, your own practice?
Yeah. So I don't think there's one way. I think every way works, but it's nice to have a way that you can fall back onto if shit hits the fan. So like this person's not getting better. Okay, let's go back to my like methodology of sorts. But I think the most important thing is like the communication side of things. Like, can you actually talk with somebody, sympathize with them? Like if you can become friends with them while they're on the table, all that stuff's really going to help your business. So I think new grads can do it and they can do a good job, but it's a lot harder for them to process all the things of like your business, getting the person better, connecting to them on a personal level, where if you have that down and you can really just spend your effort on the business growth and your own personal development, I do think it makes it easier.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, I was, gosh, like 9 or 10 years into being a PT before I started our practice.
Yeah.
I mean, you couldn't do it sooner. Yeah. It's just kind of how it all folded out for me.
Yeah. It's almost like it can run in the background, you know, because we get that a lot when people are like, okay, so I've got to connect. I've got to like understand why they're here. Then I have to like assess, do an actual evaluation, come up with a prognosis, explain it to them. And then you like go through like sales and like do all this at the same time, then schedule them for a follow-up. So it's a lot, right? To kind of plug into one hour. And if you're just like solely focused on, you know, clinical prediction rules and like sensitivity and specificity of all the shit that we learn when we first get out that really is pretty irrelevant. And you're just worried about like, even like being able to get them better. I think that would be really hard. So in your case, you had so many reps already that you feel like, all right, well, the treatment side was like, frankly, the easier side, you know, for you, you had to bolt on the business side.
Yeah. I think you should be able to treat the person, get them better while you're treating them, but also hold a full conversation at the same time.
Right.
It's like a good skill to be able to have where they don't know what you're doing because you're talking about whatever, the weather.
Yeah.
But you're getting the friendship going, but at the same time, getting them better on the table. So, or wherever you're at in the gym. So,
yeah.
Another interesting thing on my career path is I was in Portland. We moved up to Bend and I managed a lot of in-network practices. I think one of the big things that just like, said, I just got to do this on my own was I just was managing my last spot. I was managing three different clinics of an in-network practice, making sure all the PTs are like billing appropriately and showing up to work and all that stuff. But it came to the point where I was telling them to do things I just didn't believe in anymore. And that's really what, like, I was like, I can't do this. I can't sit in a meeting with somebody, tell them to bill more when they're already billing enough or whatever, tell them to use more aids, even though they're already using aids and I don't believe in it myself. So I had this big like moral dilemma of like, do I keep doing this? I even went up to the owners of the clinic and was like, hey, like, what's my end game here? Can I be like a partner or like, can I get more involvement here to have more say? And they kind of brushed me underneath the rug a little bit and that they respected me, but it also didn't really go anywhere. So I was like, okay, I'm out. Let's just do this the right way. So, I mean, that's why it probably took me again, 9 or 10 years to get there is to like learn that experience of the grass isn't always greener on the other side. So I'd be managing a clinic in Portland. I was like, oh, maybe if I go to here, it'll be better. And then 6 months later, I'm like, no, it's the same crap.
Yeah.
And it's like, okay, work out it for a few years. And I was like, okay, this isn't working. I'm not just going to get another in-network job and think it's going to be better. It's not the business owners. They're all doing the right things, whatever you need to do to put food on the table and pay the bills. But eventually, if it's not the right fit, you got to like take the wherewithal to like step out and just go and do it.
So did you have, I mean, I feel like, you know, a lot of people that we talk to, they feel that way, but then there's some moment, incident, you know, something where they're just like, fuck it. I literally can't do this anymore. And then a light bulb, like, you know, it goes off and they start really like seriously looking at something else. Did you have a moment like that? Or was it really just sort of like slowly over a long period of time?
I did, it was probably both, right? So it was kind of slowly brewing in the background. Then I did have that meeting of like, hey, can I eventually be a partner? And it just turned into like, hey, Nick, this is everything you're doing wrong kind of talk. So I was like, all right. So I left that meeting and like texted my wife right away. Like, I can't do this. That was like probably the turning point. Yeah. I did have like a pretty steep non-compete. So I knew I had to like sit out for a year and a half. So right. Like it was biting off a lot, but in the end game, it was totally worth it. And I recommend it, even if you have to sit it out, if it's the right answer for the long haul.
Yeah. Well, so what did you do? So like this was in Bend, where you were managing.
I was in Bend at that point. This was pre-COVID. I quit and I had a year and a half. I couldn't be at an outpatient clinic. So I was teaching manual therapy classes. I was involved in like NSCA. So I kind of helped organize that. And then I got like a home health gig, which actually ended up being awesome, especially with the start of COVID. I could like pick up my kids and stuff like that.
Right.
And actually enjoyed it a lot more than I thought I would. But you're kind of dying a slow death there. Like how many times do you walk them up and down the hallway kind of thing? But whatever, I got paid a lot. I feel like I didn't really work and it was a good life experience getting time with my family because I have much less of it these days.
Yeah.
We can get into that too. But so then I sat out for a year and a half. I like only still think positive things about that last business. It's not you, it's me kind of thing. So they did everything right. And I tried to follow the order of the book and open my own spot a year and a half later. Yeah. So this January would be 1 year of being full time at this thing. So yeah.
Were you able to, so did you keep your home health job as you were starting capacity?
Yeah. For like a month.
Right. Barely.
So my first month I was doing 20 hours a week. And I think I made 12K my first month.
Yeah. Oh yeah. That's right. That's a good reason to leave your home health job.
Insights on that. And I was like, I can't see these people. I was like just seeing 13 in a row a day and just like plowed through it. I was like, I can't do this. And then my wife, which we'll get into more, I guess, but she's more of like the let's be conservative. Let's not take risks. But I'm like, we just got to do this. This isn't going to work. I'm going to plateau. We're not going to grow. And so eventually she caved in and said, yeah, go for it. So January 1 of 21 is when kind of went all in.
Yeah. So I think that, a couple things. First of all, so what would you attribute your, you know, fast first month to, if anything, looking back, or was it literally just like people were waiting for you that had worked with you and they, you know, you're like, all right, my non-compete's over, I'm starting. Yeah. And then they were ready to see you.
I think that would work maybe if it was 3 to 6 months, but at that point it was 18 months.
So
people were waiting for me. I did do some personal training, which helped. So I like kind of brought some of those people on. So I just worked at a local gym, just like itch that itch a little bit because I was doing home health and needed some exercise.
Right.
But a lot of it was, again, the advantage of being somewhere for 5 or 6 years before I opened it. So the whole time I was staying in touch with doctors. I know a lot of the trainers in town. So probably a month before we opened, I was texting, emailing, letting everybody know it's going to happen. And then ideally, you know what you're doing. So if you get somebody better, it just kind of grows fairly quick.
Yep.
And then I'm still located inside a gym right now. So I definitely utilize that resource as well. I don't have my numbers in front of me, but I think that first month I maybe had like 12 evals, which is probably really good. You know, better than I did.
Month one is a lot. Yeah.
Yeah. To answer your question, just being there for a while, having connections and then not losing them throughout the process. So the second I quit, I let all the doctors know, like, hey, I'm going to open my spot in a year and a half. I love working with you and all that stuff. And compared to other people in the mastermind, for whatever reason, we get more doctor referrals. And I think a lot of that is just getting on the friend level. So I hardly ever just text a doc to like tell them about Osgood Slaughters.
Yeah.
More like, hey, are you going skiing? Or like, let's grab a beer. Or like, God, the Badgers suck this year. I'm originally from Wisconsin. You know, just like somehow finding like a connection. That's what the doctors care about. Not necessarily what your BFR does for quad tendon growth or whatnot.
100%. I totally agree with you. And I've definitely noticed that people that come out of an established in-network world where they're seeing a good bit of post-ops and they're building that rapport and they know like certain, you know, clinicians are going to be better than others. And it's just like certain docs are better than others. And so I think that that is definitely something that can help build that rapport versus not have any of that and then go into a cash, you know, setting where they don't really know you. And then you're asking them to, you know, sort of, you know, validate the fact that you need to go see this type of provider, which is then they have to kind of explain the difference to their own, their own, you know, clinicians or their own patients. Although I will say, you know, the one caveat to that would be the PTs that we work with that do a lot of post-op ACL work that go to their follow-ups with their patients.
Yeah.
That seems to work really well from a rapport standpoint and developing that trust. Cause I think that what we forget is like these docs move as well and their reputation goes with them wherever they go. Yeah. And a big part of their reputation is how do those surgeries do? And a big part of that is how the, you know, the people that work with them on the back end with the rehab side can make a huge difference in terms of outcomes. And they know that.
Exactly. Yeah. And then I would treat them for free too. So, I mean, as many free treatments as you can give to start, right? That's the people
that are
like, oh, you just gave me something for free. I'll give you some business.
Yeah.
And then I tried to refer as many people to them as possible too. So there's probably 3 or 4 docs that give us a lot of referrals. And I try to at least give them one a month is my metric back to them.
Yeah. You know, what? Like yeah, sure.
Differential diagnosis or like nothing serious, but just to keep them in the loop.
Are these more bigger hospitals or are they in like smaller practices that are, you know, that are.
We're in like a ski town, so it's got the like strong orthopedic presence, which usually goes with that. But there's 2 big groups in town with, gosh, 10 to 20 providers. So they're pretty big, but it's not like New York City or any of that.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. I've found that those sort of physician owned groups are much better than big hospital organizations where they're frankly like, they're going to get dinged if they don't send somebody to an internal kind of rehab facility, you know, as they're tracking their relative value units or whatever it might be. So I agree with you. I mean, those relationships, especially depending on like your specialty with you with snow sport stuff seems to make complete sense, right? With the amount of time you spent with that, it sounds like you're into it yourself.
Yeah.
You know, like that's a great niche in an area like that.
Yeah. The other niche that helped while I was not working, quote unquote, is I coached the local basketball team.
Yeah.
So like an assistant coach for the varsity team. So then that and actually the soccer, both of those sports are just like 2 of our like niches.
Mm.
So just getting out there and now Jimmy on the basketball team sprains his ankle. He's going to go see you. So if you have the bandwidth, getting out there and just getting involved in the community is huge.
Oh like
doing a screen's great, but that doesn't get as much buy-in as just trying to be there as often as you can. And it helps if your kid plays a sport, maybe you go to that or whatever you can do to just like get involved in the community. So then there's one less barrier to get in to see you.
Yeah. So tell me a little bit about that. So like you, how many kids do you guys have? What age are they?
Yeah. So they're 8 and 6. So we just got 2, boy and girl. in school, doing their thing.
So talk a little bit about Lindsay and how she's involved, because you're both clinicians, but it sounds like, obviously from what we've already said, like she's a little bit more of the conservative, less risk tolerant person, which I think is it. To match up with somebody that's maybe a little more risk intolerant is good because it stops us from burning everything down. Yeah. How does that work between the two of you guys?
Yeah. So you said it. So I'm more of the visionary. She's more of the operations person.
Yeah.
Like my mindset is I'll spend every dollar in our savings account if it helps us grow better and like build a better product, where her mindset is I'd rather spend one less penny on that bill. If we can save a penny, that's going to go a long ways.
Right.
It works really well because we kind of, collaborate really well and pick up each other's weaknesses. She was at another in-network clinic nearby. And like, it came to the point where I was just like, you can work 15 hours a week, be home with the kids and make just as much money.
Right.
Plus I was like dying. So I needed help. So it's just easier to get her to start than somebody else. But I think the hard part there is just like turning it off. So at home, can you like not talk about it in front of the kids? Or like, what we do is we try to set a time frame, like anything after 7 o'clock, we don't talk about work. Obviously we don't talk about it too much in front of the kids too, but it can be hard when your schedule slammed and you can't talk during the day and that's the only time you have. But I wouldn't say we haven't figured it out, but we're trying.
It is hard, man. And I think part of it is, you know, it's a family business at this point. It's very family oriented because it's the two of you, your kids see that, right? Like they go to the office, they're aware of it. Like, you know, there's a lot of really cool parts of that. The challenge I think that you just stated is, you know, is this a relationship conversation? Is this a work conversation? Yes. And they can bleed into each other very easily. Yeah. And also I think it's very enjoyable to build a business with your spouse, that you guys can like work on this thing together. It's, there, you can share the wins with somebody, you know, it's because there's also a lot of frustrations as well that can either be, I guess it could be a good thing to share that with somebody and sometimes not. But I mean, I think it's awesome. So for you guys, the way you break it up is, I guess you're seeing more of the patients at this point than she is, right? And she's doing more operations.
Yeah. She's doing 15 to 20 hours of patient care a week and then does probably another 10 to 15 of admin stuff. So she's doing QuickBooks to budgeting, to like metrics and things. I'm seeing too many people, but then I'm seeing 40 hours a week of people. And then we're just hired somebody. So we have a third person coming on, which will be super helpful. I'm typically, my role is to like meet with the docs, set up workshops, do all the networking, work on the social media side of things, and just try to get the brand out there. And her job is to make sure like we're not just bleeding and like spending money in places we shouldn't be. And like, I just don't have the bandwidth to keep track of the budget as well as I should. So, I mean, she's really helping me on all that stuff, which is probably the most important stuff. So
making sure you have a business license and insurance, like this, the stuff that, you know, you're just like, you're paying taxes, all that stuff. I think, you know, it's interesting with her. What is her niche? So like, do you guys share overlapping sort of, you know, populations or do you have different niches?
Good question. No, she's like an ultra marathoner. So she'll go and run like 40 miles on a Saturday and does 100-mile races. So she's crazy like that. So her niche is running. So she's like a certified run coach. So she does like online programming for people to like, do like a package where you get like one visit a month in programming, or she'll just do a lot of the gait analysis and that such. And then I'm more of like the ball sport ski guy is kind of my niche, but we're in a gym as well. So a lot of barbell athletes too. And then the person we're hiring is a little bit more of like a female return to play ACL person. So there is some wherewithal there of trying to get the right niches to match up. So we're not all doing the same stuff.
Yeah. Well, I've seen it kind of in two different, it worked well in two different ways. Number one, it's just like, you're just like, do we dominate this niche? Everybody just, you know, it's just runners or whatever, or just women's health.
Yeah.
Or there's this, you know, sort of Swiss Army knife of practice approach where it's like, you're a basketball player, you hurt your ankle, you got to see Nick, or, you know, or, you're a runner and you're having anterior knee pain, Lindsay's your better choice. Right. So it's like, we match you up with whoever we think is the best fit based on what you're telling us. Yeah. And there's also an opportunity to refer internally if there's somebody that, you know, thinks they have a better skill set for that or whatever it might be. So, yeah, you know, I think they both work. I think it just depends on which one you want to pick. It sounds like you guys are going more for the Swiss Army approach. Yeah.
Yeah. It's pretty awesome taking a phone call though, and someone says, I want to see her because she's the runner. Like, it's good to like have people already dictate who they're going to see before you have to like talk to them. So like I said, we're growing fast, and she's hanging in there and also doing a lot of the mom stuff as well while I'm not home too much. So she's got her hands full, even though she might not be in the clinic as much.
Well, what are you going to try to do as far as volume goes? I mean, like, what do you think is sustainable for you to get down to? Cause right now, obviously, you know, you're seeing a lot, and there's obviously, we have these growth cycles before we bring people on where we're kind of like, you know, overwhelming ourselves in some ways for shorter periods of time. So, you know, what's like an ideal work schedule for you over this next year in particular?
Yeah, great question. So this first year, I've mostly just been in like the mindset of just grind it out. Just like, if you need to come in on a Saturday, I'll see you, whatever needs to happen, I'm going to make it happen. One of my big caveats in PT is when you call and they're like, yeah, I can see you in 4 weeks, but you're like, I sprained my ankle today.
Yeah.
Another one is when like PTs brag about having a waiting list. I just think that's, what is that proving? You can make people wait to get better. Like, that's not something to be proud of. So like, I want to do my best to like get you in quick, get you better. I don't want to remove barriers. So for that reason, like, I know I'm going to have to like see people, right? That's just part of it. But right now I think I've been around 30 or 40 patients a week, where I'd like that number to be more like 20-ish. I don't think I'll ever give it up, maybe down to 10 long-term.
Yeah.
New person starting, I want her to be roughly at 20-ish relatively soon. And then Lindsay, my wife, around 10-ish a week would be kind of a good sweet spot.
Yeah.
So like right now, I just don't have the bandwidth to build the business as much as I'd like to. So that's where I really want to get to this year, is just hold myself accountable to keeping my blocks and keeping my schedule the way it should be versus just squeezing people in.
Yeah. Well, your background, I think what I've seen too, with people that are instructors, and I'd actually like to kind of dig into a little bit more with that with Institute for Physical Art is, you know, people that teach tend to be great mentors for other clinicians that are coming in, if they have the time to do it. Like, that's the challenge. It's like, if they're just busy and they're, you know, they're redlining the whole time, then we drop the ball on building and developing the people we're bringing in. So in a way, it's kind of like, you know, you're limiting growth of the facility because of lack of being able to mentor these other people. And it's, you're like a force multiplier with them versus, you know, just solely focus on the people that you're working with. So, you know, for you with the Institute for Physical Art, like what's your role with that? Like, what do you typically do with them, and how does that work with, you know, the education side of things?
Yeah. So I teach a lot of their like lower quarter classes. So like pelvic, hip, knee, foot and ankle stuff. So some are virtual, some are live. Again, it's manual therapy combined with neuro. So it's usually like 2 or 3 day classes that will fly to, I'm mostly on the West Coast, California, Washington, Nevada, that area. I probably teach, COVID's changed it a little bit, 6 or 7 times a year, probably do a couple virtual ones on top of that. But one of the best parts is you just get to be part of the network.
Yeah.
So we get 2 or 3 referrals a month, just being part of that network of, oh, you work here and you know that kind of background on PT, I'm going to send you my mom who just moved to Bend or whatnot. So it does help. I should have the stats there too, but like, we do get consistent referrals just from being part of that like brand or institute. But you're 100% right. One of my big goals, again, is being able to step away and mentor more, because ideally I want everybody else kind of having similar skill sets, but also getting good outcomes. And there's no way I can do that if I'm seeing a lot of patients. But I think one of the really fun things that we're pivoting into is trying to create that like work environment that you never want to leave and want to be at forever. So that's where we've been spending so much time, of building all of our systems and things to really allow that to happen, where I want you making a lot of money, getting good outcomes. We have like an unlimited con ed budget, where like, we just want you to keep learning and growing. That's just going to keep you from getting stagnant. Where again, hopefully it's a place you don't get burnt out into a year later. If you're only seeing 20 patients a week, you can travel 5 times a year to take a class and you're making a large sum of money.
Yeah. Well, I think that's I think the problem in the profession in so many ways that I do think that, you know, a clinic like yours, a clinic like the one that we have the opportunity to take people. Like, there's plenty of people that want to be just average, and they just want to, they want to clock in, clock out, and you know, they want to have a job, you know, and that's fine. Like, there's plenty of places for people to have employment within our profession in that scenario. You know, I think like yourself, you fell into sort of this subcategory of somebody that like, this is more like a form of art to them. This is something that they want to be the best in the world at. They're borderline obsessed with like learning and growing and improving even marginally basically forever. And those kind of people, I think they get very frustrated in traditional environments. If not challenged, if not given the opportunity to grow, and then frankly, overwhelmed with a bunch of people that they can't even use the skills that they've worked so hard to gain. So finding those people and giving them an opportunity to really evolve and develop, and the resources to learn more, as well as, you know, but also being able to chart their worth. Because the thing is, like, they are different, they're better, and they want to be better than the average. So being okay with that, and you being able to support that, like, that seems to be the way that this can work, you know, in a way where they can make more money, see less people, and continue to grow and evolve in a culture that really, you know, supports that.
Yeah. I don't know if you've noticed this, but with the younger generation, that's a harder sell than it used to be.
Yeah.
I think I am a millennial, but we'll put millennials in a little category here of like, they'd rather make less, have a better retirement account, and have things be guaranteed than make more, build their own schedule the way they want. They kind of want that 9 to 5, clock in, clock out. So
yeah,
I think maybe 10 years ago it was easier to find that PT, where I think now it's a little trickier. Like, we had some interviews where the guy's like, you know what, my retirement setup at my current job is just too good to leave, even though he hated the job and hated the people he was working with and all that stuff. Or I'm like, okay, well, that, you're not going to be a good fit for us anyway, if that's like what you're hanging your hat on. So it's harder to find the right person than you would think, I guess.
I would agree with you. So yes. So, you know, like, how old are you?
I am 38. Yeah.
38. Okay. Oh, so I'm 30. How old am I? 36. I'll turn 36. I turned 37 in a couple months. So right around the same time, we're like the tail, like the early millennial, maybe there's something to be said for that. Right. But like, I think the bigger thing is, you know, your upbringing and the people you've been around and the things that you sort of are exposed to from an early age, as well as, I do think that safety for a lot of people, honestly, work-life balance means a lot, which is not necessarily a bad thing. You know, I think in some ways I'm envious of someone that can literally just be like, turn it off, and they just learn about butterflies whenever they're not around, or whatever they're into. You know, they're into some other shit. They have hobbies. They have, and for me, it's just like, no, I'll be obsessive over this person. I couldn't get better. And then that took that same sort of like weird obsession to business. And in a lot of ways, it's been very positive if you can focus it on the right things. Finding somebody like that is not the easiest thing to do. But somebody like that is going to be so much happier in an environment where, you know, you're just around a bunch of other killers in the profession that want to be the best, and they want to grow with other people that want to be the best. You also have to be careful with people like that, because it's kind of like raising a baby lion. Because if you don't do the right things, like, they can maul you and, you know, and create a problem. Yeah. So you're asking for like a high performer. You have to put the environment in place for that person to be a high performer. Otherwise, they'll leave as well.
Yeah. And one thing I've learned, which you probably agree with, is just like, hire early rather than late. So like, I wish I would have hired this person sooner. And like, I'm already interviewing the next person pretty soon here, even though I probably am not ready for them, but I'd rather hire them and train them up than way too late and get screwed over working way too much. So
Well, it's more fun and it's safer, right? So, you know, if you have one person and that person leaves, 100% of your employees have left, right? If you have two people, 50% are gone if one person leaves. So I think it's better that way, as well as, you know, from a cultural standpoint, it's nice to have kind of, you know, multiple people. And it what's interesting too is like, that can also lead to, you know, frustrations with how personalities get along together. But it is what it is. It's the most fun part of starting a business, in my opinion. Is it's not the, you know, whatever time freedom you may end up having, or the financial freedom you can develop, or whatever. It's literally the people you get a chance to like share an environment with that you have cultivated and created that is like special to you. And the thing that you get to, you know, attract are the people that want to be in that environment too. So you're not like, you know, you're not dealing with Steve over here that just doesn't want to like do anything and is constantly just like running out the door as soon as the day is over and is always 10 minutes late. Like it's literally you can fire that person because, you know, it's, you wouldn't hopefully hire them in the first place. So I think the culture side of it is just, it's fun. Like, and every year we have our Christmas like dinner or party or whatever we're having. And it's just so freaking cool to be able to have people come together that are friends of yours that like, we don't look at it as employees. Like we work together, like on these things, we're working in the same place and we're part of the same challenges and we're solving these, you know, together. And they're just fun people to be around. And it, you know, I'm just, you know, I'm looking forward to you kind of get to that point because you get a chance to be the leader of that, whether better for better or worse, like you're the person and you're driving that.
Yeah. Yeah. And I wouldn't say like we had a goal either. I think our big goal was just to like get people better and start to like just get our name out there.
Yeah.
Where I think some people might work better, like, oh, I need to make X thousand dollars this year to be a successful year. My goal is just like, can we just get good reviews and get people better?
Right.
And I think it kind of organically happens from there. You know, if you talk to a business folk, I probably should have this specific number next year. And I think I do, but I'd rather just focus on like the ins and outs of just getting the basics done. And then hopefully as I can step away more, I can spend more time on all the other really important business stuff I haven't been able to.
Yeah, but it's, you know, it sounds like the way you guys have it set up, you know, it sounds like Lindsay is probably a little bit more, you know, in tune with a lot of those things like metrics and numbers and all that stuff. And there is something to be said for just being like really, really good at what you do and getting people outcomes, because like this idea of being remarkable, people think that they're really good. And I kind of don't really like to have these conversations with people when it does have to happen, because it's always kind of awkward and it's hard not to like hurt somebody's feelings. But, you know, I get people all the time. They're like, man, we're just really good. I wish more people knew about us. And I kind of have to be like, well,
are you that good?
Yeah. Like if you were that awesome, everyone would know about you. So like there's something, and it may not be your clinical skill set. It might be the way in which you're communicating with people. It might be your customer experience. It might be the fact that like, you know, you literally are dropping the ball places that you're not aware of. And that's leading to people not necessarily being dissatisfied and leaving you a negative review, but you're just living in the middle with everybody else, which they're never going to send their friend your way because they're putting their own reputation on the line as someone of trust and credibility when they recommend you. So if you do a world-class job and they're like, oh my God, like I've had people literally, like we have this one realtor that likes us so much. He tells people, if you go here and you don't have the best like experience you've ever had at a medical facility, I'll pay for your visit. And it's like, how do you do that? Like, how do you talk? Like, I didn't know he was doing that until I met a patient that told me he was doing that. And I was like, Jesus, like, that's crazy. I would never say that to somebody else's business. I'll pay for your meal if you don't like this restaurant. But we helped him avoid surgery and a couple other things. Yeah. So like, anyway, like you get people to do that.
Yeah.
You don't have to be that great at marketing.
Yeah. Agreed. I'm never going to go back to working for somebody else. And I'm so happy with like the situation we're in right now.
Yeah.
But I think sometimes people forget it is very hard this like first year or two. It's not you're working 6 hours a week and making six figures. A lot of the other cash practice owners that I think have been slow, I just don't get like you're working 10 hours a week. How are you going to make more money? I think there's got to be some mindset of like, I got to work to make this happen. Again, maybe it's like a side hustle or whatnot, but I think we're all kidding ourselves if you think you're going to work 20 hours a week and grow a business past yourself. And it does take some, you know, hard work. And I think I knew that going in, and I was a pretty hard worker going in, but this is by far the hardest I've worked. But to counter that, I love it. Like I'm not like burnt out or anything. Obviously, I just wish I was home a little bit more and stuff like that, but it's worth every moment. And like, I could just see the light at the end of the tunnel of getting this business where we want it to be and stepping back and really just growing this awesome company for other people to work at.
That's I think that's the key, right? Is like, you know, what you said is super, it's just very spot on in terms of the amount of work. Just think about like starting anything takes a lot of effort. Just like, you know, if you're pushing a sled, like the hardest part is literally getting that shit started and then like keeping it going is easier. Yeah. Right. And I think that for where you're at, it's funny. there's a lot of people that, yeah, they have a harder time, and it's, it depends on their context, their situation, where they're at. Maybe they just moved somewhere new, you know, maybe they are working part-time, like, and it's a slower start, but it's hard either way. And a lot of it is not necessarily just it's hours is one thing, but there's a constant sort of like mental struggle of, is this working? Do I know what I'm doing? Do I not know what I'm doing? And it's like, and it can happen in one day. You can go from like, this is awesome to like, oh shit, this isn't working in like an hour. So, you know, how have you dealt with that? Cause I feel like that is the thing, and it's all mental, frankly, people struggle with and will cause them to go back to a safe job that they actually don't even like.
I think this is part of my personality, but I'm just like the one day at a time person. Like, I don't try to overthink things. Like, okay, this is what I'm going to do today. I'll worry about tomorrow when tomorrow comes. Obviously, like I plan a little bit in the process. But I think if you overthink things and worry about where this next patient's coming from versus get the patient in front of you better and get like your systems and business in order, you end up just like spinning the wheel and being counterproductive. Instead of spending that 20 minutes looking at how many evals you had last month, spend that 20 minutes going to coffee with somebody or like getting on the phone or shooting an email or shooting a text. So like, I always just had the belief, like if you build it, it will come. So I was just like, okay, another day, just grind, just go. Like, don't worry about the numbers, it will happen. And there's downs. Like, we had a month, I think September, I don't know why, but for some reason it was like our slowest month. And like, we were both lying in bed, like, what the hell are we doing now? Luckily we have a savings account, but let's just hope this comes out. And then the next month, like we had like a 40K month. We had the most evals we've ever had. I think something that just builds into spending more time marketing and outreaching versus only doing it when you need to, trying to just keep that a steady thing.
Right.
I learned that the hard way, but, I guess it's just like, keep working and it will come. If you're genuine, you're hardworking and you get results, it will happen. You'll have ups and downs, but you just got to stick to it. That's kind of been my attitude of just like, hey, next day, let's go. Next day, let's go.
Well, what for you, what's been the hardest part? Cause I feel like, there's obviously the work is one thing, but like, is there anything that you've really struggled with that you've had to try to, you know, work through and improve that, you know, as far as entrepreneurship goes that you didn't expect?
Yeah. I mean, I wouldn't say I'm a social media ninja. It's not my favorite thing, but I do it and I think it's okay. I don't think I'm very good at budgeting. So I always struggled with that to start. Like Lindsay, my wife, wasn't working with me and was asking me questions. I'm like, I have no idea. But at that point you're working so much and it's just like, as long as it keeps coming in, I don't really care where it goes out, which isn't the best way to go.
No.
So if you don't have someone that's good to help you support that, you definitely got to like hold yourself true to like making that a big priority. Like I would do QuickBooks like every month and I would just like scream my head into a pillow. I just hated it so much, but some people like it, some people don't, but you have to be like, okay with doing things you don't want to do, especially to start until you can have the bandwidth to hire people. So, I mean, that's been the hard thing. And then just the turning it off. I'm in this room inside we are in like a 10,000 square foot gym. I could be here every day, all day for 10 hours a day and be actually kind of happy about it.
Yeah.
Just that ability to just turn it off and like, so I've been putting things on my schedule just says go home. That's like a block, or just make sure you go skiing is what another block says. Like just holding myself to getting out of here and just like making sure you put life as a priority. And I'm hopeful that just gets easier as the business grows, but
it does. I mean, you know, it's interesting because I feel like there's this interesting stage where you have to, you can't have balance very well for a period of time. It's just kind of impossible. Yeah. Really, I don't think it's just with this, but anything of significance that you try to do that's hard, there can't be much balance. Yeah. And, but then like to get back to that point, it's actually really hard because you feel guilty. You're used to a certain amount of capacity of work and you know, so your body, you just, you know, acclimate to that. And then all of a sudden you have like downtime and you feel like you should be doing something to be productive when in actuality, you just need to chill the fuck out a little bit. And that's a really hard thing to do to get back to, you know? Yeah. So yeah, that's probably going to be a challenge for you as you work towards that.
And like I said, I've managed some in-network clinics and I always enjoyed building it. And then once it got to a really good level, I felt like, what do I do next?
Right.
So I'm a little anxious about that. Like I've got to think that through a little bit more, but like once it's that time to step back, like, what am I going to do to scratch that itch? Am I going to write a book? Am I going to, I don't know what I'm going to do. I got to figure out something.
You can do whatever you want. But, I mean, that's the crazy thing about it, right? Yeah. Is like, and for you, I guess it brings up the flip side of that, right? So, what's been the best part of you deciding to do this, which is a scary move for a lot of people.
Yeah. The best part is obviously like running your own schedule. Like, we're going to Disneyland next week, or nice. I'll just like get out and go skiing or whatever, you know. It's just like the whole flexibility of you're running the whole show. And it's super nice not having to like report to somebody, yeah. You know, like that whole, like, hey, you do your own thing as long as it's working. Well, the negative of that is like, it is kind of nice to have someone pat you on the back, which is why being part of your group is so awesome. Just getting confirmation bias that like what you're doing is worthwhile and working.
Right.
You have no idea if what you're doing is good or bad. But yeah, I think the big perk is, again, as the kids get older, I want to like go to the soccer tournament in Salem a few hours away and like not feel like I'm putting the business at jeopardy to do that. And so I think, I don't know how old your kids are, but they're going to get to that phase where every weekend something, we haven't been there yet, but it's fast approaching and I want to be there and not be at work all the time. So I'm just super excited about having all that flexibility.
Yeah. Well, my kids are 10 and 8. And I think that, you know, the stage, you're doing this a little later than when I started. My daughter was 6 months. My son was 2 whenever we started our practice, which there's pros and cons of that, because that's a sketchy time as a parent as well.
Yeah.
But you know, when you're talking about the time freedom side of things, it's easily the most valuable thing, right? Like the fact that you can prioritize those things. Now, granted, you don't have to, because there is nobody holding you accountable, but this is one of the things that we get a lot, even with our mastermind, right? It's like, once people get past a certain point, the conversations start to change a little bit in terms of, you know, okay, like evals, you know, your KPIs and like all the nuts and bolts of the business. And then it's really like, well, damn, how do I manage this sort of erratic person that I am that would literally be here 10 hours a day? Yes. And like, how do I create like mental space and the things to enjoy what you've created? Because sadly, a lot of entrepreneurs, and this is one of the things that I notice a lot in other groups that I'm in, they are hyper successful in one area and they're unhealthy typically, or a flip side is they're like, they count everything that they eat and they're like, you know, a monk about everything. They don't have much balance there at all. And they tend to either do great with their family or they're on their third marriage. And, you know, so like if you really look at what the score of life, whatever that arbitrary number might be, or how you calculate it, who knows, but finances and business and all that, that's just like a small fraction of it, right? It's something we find value in and we enjoy it. But once we get to a certain point, it's like, yeah, how do you not just go to your kid's game, but how are you actually like at being present there? And like, you're there, but are you mentally there? And that's always, I think, a frustration.
Yeah.
Or just thinking about this other thing, because all of a sudden you're not at the office. You're like, oh fuck, I need to do this when I get there versus pay attention to your family. Like talk to somebody else about something else. And as strange as that sounds, that's a very, very hard thing for people like you and I to actually do.
Yes. Yeah. I think looking back on it, I don't know if you've got advice here, but I wish I would have known I was more entrepreneurial early on in my career. Like I could have probably done this 5 years earlier.
Sure.
And I was always just like, again, the grass is greener on the other side. And I just thought it was the job, where I think it was always me. So I don't know, maybe if I read your book sooner or did more like business stuff sooner, I would have realized like, oh, it's not them, it's me kind of thing.
Well, I don't know. I feel like it's challenging because, I think people like yourself who are, I call them like reluctant entrepreneurs, tend to be the best, because they have, you know, tried other things. And at a certain point you're like, what other option do I have? And that's all you have left. And then you realize, oh man, but all these things you learned along the way have actually probably been a massive help for you in the business that you did eventually, you know, build. And sure, like you totally could have done it 5 years ago, but maybe at that point you weren't quite ready to do it. And you've had extremely fast growth, like some of the fastest growth we've ever seen, even within our mastermind. And a lot of that's probably because of all these experience and all these things that come together between like teaching for another group and running these other clinics and having these pre-existing relationships and being really good at what you do and being a hard worker. And so like you mix all that together and it's like, yeah, no wonder that's happened. Like it's all the things we need all in one place and just came together at the time that was correct, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Well said. Yeah. So it always works out.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's another thing that helps as a business owner is like, it'll work. Just keep going.
Well, I think that the bigger thing is to look at like the, like you have what, like a year roughly, right? A full time, you know, within your practice. So you have a very like small sample size. And so as we start to look at like, you know, if you're just starting and you've only been in business for a month, you have a tiny sample size. So all of these things that happen, they're exaggerated in terms of their importance to you, positively or negatively. So we have these huge swings in emotions. And what happens is as you've been in business longer, or really anything, whatever you're dealing with longer, this could be in sport, this could be, you know, other experiences you're having outside of that, you have a longer time frame to be able to like relate experiences. And you're like, oh, well, that happened. Like, I remember the first December I was in business, I thought I was going out of business. I didn't know that these businesses don't necessarily like run as efficiently, they're not as busy in December as they are in, you know, January or whatever, when people are not traveling for the holidays. And of course, looking back, you're like, yeah, dummy, people, you know, they go visit family at Christmas. Like that's normal. Yeah. But I remember like sitting on the couch, I was literally looking at jobs at hospitals for PRN jobs I was going to do on the weekend. Luckily, I was too lazy to apply for any of them because the first quarter of the next year, I went really busy and I didn't know. So my response was very erratic I overshot what it should have been. So I think that for you, what's cool is like the longer that you are in it, the more you're just going to turn into like a little Yoda in your own business. And that's going to calm everybody else down because you're essentially the person they're going to look to for that, just like your family.
Yeah, exactly. But I guarantee when you had that December month, you weren't thinking about quitting, right?
No. I was literally like, how am I going to drag this out? Like, I'm like, I don't want to work at a hospital, but I'm going to on the weekends so that I can keep doing my, you know, floating my business and then eventually leave the hospital. That's why I was doing it. Not because I wanted to go and get a job somewhere. Because even like the smallest amount of success, I remember after the first time somebody paid me in cash, and this probably actually was the reason it was so memorable. Yeah. The first patient I had, his name was Sam. He gave me $525 cash because it was $175 a visit. He paid me for 3 hours. Yeah. He came in middle of the freaking summer in Atlanta in a hot ass gym. We're like sweating all over each other. He's like, that was awesome. Thanks so much. He gives me a little wad of money. Yeah. And I remember sitting there and I didn't leave my office for probably like 20 minutes. I just counted it. And I remember just being like, holy shit.
This is
like,
real. Yeah.
Look at this. Like this guy just paid me. And he also gave me a big ass sweaty bear hug. Yeah. He was like this big defense contractor that had been following me around our blog somehow. Yeah. And I remember thinking like, this is amazing. Like I made the best decision ever. Yeah. And that lasted for a short period of time. And then I was like, oh fuck, where's the next person coming from? It's crazy, but there was no doubt in my mind. And I'm sure for you too, like, you would never go back to work for somebody else, would you?
Yeah. I remember the first package I sold, I like skipped out of the clinic and like ran and called my wife right away. Like someone's doing it. It's happening.
It worked. You're right.
It's addictive too. Like when you sell those packages or those plans of care and people just jump on your ship and go with you, it's such a great feeling.
Yeah.
And then people just get it too, right? If they've been to four other PTs and you're the fifth person and you actually tell them what's wrong and talk to them for more than 2 minutes, like,
yeah,
sure. Just take all my money.
you're so right, man. I think that's one thing you brought up earlier too, is just the ability to build rapport with people and connect with somebody is like, I think we take that for granted that if somebody goes to a, any sort of clinic, whatever it might be, the amount of time that somebody actually spends with them, asking them about what's going on and listening to them is so small. And it's just so rare that if you do that, I think it's the biggest differentiator in these types of practices is like the ability to listen to someone and build trust with them, you know, and in a vulnerable space for them, they're dealing with something that's stopping them from doing something they really want to do or causing pain in some other way in their life. Like just that alone is such a huge part of it. And it's such an overlooked part in, you know, the education process of just even getting our own degrees. Right. So, you know, I think that for what you're talking about, like carrying a conversation, becoming a friend or building trust with them while you're actually like solving the problem.
Yep.
That's the key. Huge.
Yeah. And then, I mean, we're like texting them two or three times that first week, if they're having surgery, like we call them before and after surgery. It's just like that ability to like have touch points and connect is just so, so huge. And people just love that stuff.
I completely agree.
Horrible PT, but they'll still come see you just because you care and give them the time to do it. Yeah.
Well, you can't fake that. Like, and you can't automate giving a fuck. Like, I think you can't automate calling somebody and seeing how their surgery, or, hey, dude, are you nervous? Like, do you have any questions about this? Like, here's what I can tell you. Here's your best thing to do. And, you know, and most people just wouldn't even do that because it takes time. It takes effort and being intentional, you know? Yeah. So even hearing these little things of what you're doing, it's like, no wonder you guys are crushing it. Like you're doing things that other people frankly are just not.
Yeah. And they don't have the bandwidth. If you see 25 people a day, you don't even know who 10 of those people are. How are you going to follow through with them biweekly or whatever it is? So, yeah.
Well, they know it too. They don't want to be there either. Like, think about how many people you have that come from that environment. Yeah. And you know, they're like, dude, I don't want to be over here on the, you know, the shuttle doing, you know, plyometrics that, you know, while somebody's over here in the corner talking to somebody else about it. I spent 5 minutes with this person and I'm just going there to do stuff I could do at a gym. Like, why am I even here? And there's no skill necessarily involved. And it's not the fault of the provider necessarily. Like, I'm sure they don't want to do that. I didn't want to do that when I worked in those environments, but you don't have an option because the other thing is you got 25 notes to write. So if you're not actually trying to chip away those during the day, you're spending hours at the end of the day, just catching up.
Yeah. Agreed. Yeah.
Anyway, we could bitch about the profession for the next hour. We'll go ahead and we'll drop it there. And I want to finish with just people being, you know, getting a chance to be able to reach out to you. Cause you're right. You guys have, first of all, you guys are in a super cool area. You know, lots of outdoor activities to do. You're growing like a weed. Somebody's interested in kind of learning more about what you guys are doing and you know, see if, even, honestly, if your company's the right fit for them or just touching base or know somebody in Bend that's, you know, needs some help. Like, where can they learn more about your practice and reach out to you?
Yeah. Just one other nugget I want to throw in before that. So we probably have more PTs per capita than like any other city in America.
Really?
We have just swamped. There's just so many PTs. I think one thing I've learned in the process being in Bend is like, don't worry about what other people do. Just worry about what you do. So, I mean, I'm referring people to other PTs and like, I mean, they're competition at the same point, but again, don't stress that.
There's a lot of people that we can help that.
Yeah.
They don't even know we can help them.
Yeah. And I feel like I sometimes send them to somebody else. And if they don't get results, they come back to me. So that idea of like the giver, have you read that book?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Awesome book. If you haven't read it, it'll change your world. But yeah, we're in Bend, Oregon. So you can find us at capacity.pt on Instagram. You can find us at capacitypt.com. You can email me at nickh@capacitypt. So social media has a lot of fun stuff. We do a lot of ACL stuff from return to play, even a lot of barbell stuff. So we'll have a lot of good videos on there if you're a PT and just kind of want to geek out on some exercise stuff.
Nice.
Or even learn some manual therapy techniques and things like that. But if you're a client who needs help, shoot an email, get on the webpage. It's decent enough to figure out what we do. And we get a good amount of referrals just from the web platform itself. So we'd love to help or reach out if you have questions.
Cool. Man, this was great. Thank you so much for your time today. I know you're obviously a busy guy. You got a lot of stuff to do, but you shared some great stuff today. I hope people really take away some of the nuggets that you dropped in there. And it's very easy to see why you're having success with, you know, what you guys are doing and your work ethic and commitment to really like being great and helping other people. It's just common. You guys doing it. It's cool to watch.
Well, yeah. Thanks to you guys. Give me all the framework for this stuff. So you're involved in that process as well. So
Tiny bit, man. All we got to do is just find people like you and then just like throw some proven like systems in there and then you just run with it. And the coolest part is to watch you have success and then see like what other things that, you know, come from that with shared experiences of people. I think like that's been actually like my favorite part is we get the right people together on a monthly basis and together a couple times a year. And then all of a sudden, like the model evolves, it improves. And then, you know, next thing you know, like we literally have, you know, a handful of people that are at the 7-figure mark that are blowing past it, not even like, you know, limping past it. They're killing it. And I don't think anybody thought, definitely not me, you know, 8 years ago or when I started my practice, that this was something that could even grow to that size. Yep. I just thought I'd be in a CrossFit gym by myself, but hey, better than, you know, the alternative. Yeah. These are, you know, very scalable at this point. And it's cool to watch.
Yeah. And then I know we're trying to leave. One other nugget is,
go ahead.
The reason why I think we grew so quick too was like we signed up to be part of the mastermind before I even started the business. So like that immediate mentoring and systems was huge. Obviously kind of scary. You're not making any money and you're paying for mentorship, but that's one other tip I advise is like get help as soon as you can. Don't die for 6 months before you reach out for help. So,
which is normal. That's what most people do. It just depends on like how much you have to beat your head against the wall to realize you don't know it. But I mean, the same thing happens like clinically, right? Think about with you, with being a clinical educator, you know, you have some people and they're straight out of school and they're just like, hey, teach me, like I'm ready. And there's no bad habits and they haven't had to like get frustrated with patients. And then you have some people that come in 10 years later, you know, and they're like, okay, tell me a little bit about what I should do. And you know, I'm sure the people that start early, you know, you probably see accelerated change with them.
Yeah. Agreed. All right.
Cool. All right. We'll finish it there. Nick, thank you so much for your time. I really appreciate it, guys. As always, thank you so much for watching this in the Facebook group and listening to the podcast. So we will catch you guys next week.
What's up, PT entrepreneurs? We have a new exciting challenge for you guys. It's our 5-day PT Biz part-time to full-time challenge where we help you get crystal clear on how to actually go from a side hustle to a full-time clinic. Even if you haven't started yet, this is a great way to get yourself organized in preparation for eventually going full-time into your business. So we actually help you get crystal clear on how much money you're actually going to need to replace with your business to be able to make a lateral transfer, how many people you're actually going to need to see based on what you should be charging. We're going to tell you 3 different strategies you can take to go from part-time to full-time, and you get to pick the one that seems like the best fit for you for your current situation. We even show you all the sales and marketing systems that we teach within our mastermind for people that are scaling to multiple clinicians, you know, past themselves, that you need to have in your business to be able to go full-time. And the last thing is we help you create a 1-page business plan. This is a plan that's going to help you get very clear on exactly what you need to do and drive action. That's what this is all about. We want you to win. We want you to take action. And in order to do so, you have to get really clear on what you need to do next. So go to physicaltherapybiz.com/challenge. Get signed up for the challenge today. It's totally free. We think this is going to be a game changer for you and are excited to go through it. Hey, real quick before you go, I just want to say thank you so much for listening to this podcast, and I would love it if you got involved in the conversation. So this is a one-way channel. I'd love to hear back from you. I'd love to get you into the group that we have formed on Facebook. Our PT Entrepreneurs Facebook group has about 4,000 clinicians in there that are literally changing the face of our profession. I'd love for you to join the conversation, get connected with other clinicians all over the country. I do live trainings in there with Eve Gigi every single week, and we share resources that we don't share anywhere else outside of that group. So if you're serious about being a PT entrepreneur, a clinical rainmaker, head to that group, get signed up, go to facebook.com/groups/PT entrepreneur, or go to Facebook and just search for PT entrepreneur. And we're going to be the only group that pops up under that name.